the camp settled down quietly for December, the night of December 28th. It was a mild night. The temperature barely got down to freezing. Peaceful. And there was no anticipation of trouble, as nearly as anyone can tell, either on the Army or the Indian side. Next morning, came time to, quote, disarm the Indians. This, the quote, is from the orders from General Miles, who was the commanding officer of the Department of the Missouri. After apprehending Bigfoot, disarm him. And for that purpose, the men were assembled in what came to be known as the square, down here beside the hill, down near Bigfoot's tent. And they were faced by B and K troops set up at right angles facing into the square. The men, some enlisted men, were sent into the Indian camp to pick up any weapons they might find, and they sort of overdid it. They took women's butcher knives and awls and all sorts of stuff, a big pile of that sort of hardware that caused some hard feeling. But in order not to agitate the Indians, only officers were permitted to go into the tents, into the teepees, and search. Some weapons were found, but not nearly enough, not nearly as many as been seen the day before. So then in the square, they lined the Indians up and had them come past a committee of officers and had them open their blankets one at a time to inspect for rifles. The first two or three went through, no guns, and then they began finding guns. Meanwhile, the medicine man, Yellowbird, was conducting a ceremony. He was speaking of the ghost dance. He was speaking of the ghost shirts. He was chanting to the young men and saying that those who wore the ghost shirt of the ghost dance were immune from danger. The bullets of the white man will miss you and float harmlessly out over the prairie. And there was tension building. There was the young men who had never had a chance to win war honors as their fathers had. And the officers commented on it. And then here is the place where the story becomes cloudy. We know everything about Wounded Knee except two things: exactly how the fight erupted and exactly how many Indians were killed. But the best story seems to be there was a young Indian, Black Coyote, who was waving his rifle, saying he had paid much money for it. He wasn't going to give it up. While Black Coyote was holding the gun in the crook of his arm, trying to roll a big cigarette in a piece of newspaper, two sergeants slipped up, seized him, trying to get his gun, and in a scuffle, his gun tipped up and fired. And at the same instant, the medicine man threw a cloud of dust in the air, and a half a dozen young Indians threw off their blankets and aimed their repeating Winchesters at K-Troop. And as onlookers have later reported, Lieutenant Robinson yelled, "Look out, they're going to fire." Captain Varnum said, "My God, they have broken." The Indian interpreter, Philip Wells, found that an Indian was stalking him with a knife. And then a split second later, the Indian volley ripped into K Troop. B and K fired back. And then, in remembering it later, "There was an awful roar," said Dog Chief. "It sounded like the tearing of canvas. Rough feather. Everything was smoking from then on," Peter Stand. "People were all lying around where formerly they were sitting," said Richard Afraid of Hawk. Once the fight erupted in the square, we get into what has been often referred to as the fog of battle, the confusion. Most of the 7th Cavalry troops were stationed out at a distance. They didn't know what had happened. And with the Indians in the Indian camp, they didn't know either. But the way the Indian firing began, aimed at K Troop, that which missed the troopers of K Troop would have gone into the Indian camp. The way K and B troops up here were positioned, they could have hit each other. And so it follows very likely that some of the Army casualties were from the Army's own guns, and some of the Indians' first casualties among women and children was from Indian guns. The ironic way these things happen. But once the fighting erupted, Those who could escape the square fled down here, over here into the teepee area. The women, of course, were in panic and confusion. They'd been loading wagons, harnessing wagons. Several wagons of women and children went charging out up this road over here, which was then Fast Horse Road. But as the men fled and into the camp, some of them would kneel and fire back at the troops, and at this point, the Hotchkiss guns, four of them, these Hotchkiss little Hotchkiss mountain rifles firing a 2.5-pound explosive shells from up here on this hill, opened up on the Indian camp, and then there was pandemonium. Shrapnel was striking people. They were screaming. Teepees were flaring up and burning, and now men, women, and children were pouring in a flood over into the ravine over back here. This ravine, about 10 to 15 feet deep, very rugged, very good shelter from rifle fire, but not too much protection from the shrapnel of shells that would arc over into it.